All right, folks, welcome back to the latest Mountain West Wire football podcast edition, week three recap. MWWire.com is the website. Thanks everybody who stopped by to check it out. MWCWire Twitter, where we accept your Sunday morning feelings about your team. Thanks for that. Facebook, Mountain West Wire, and yeah, Jeremy Moss, Matt Kennerly, and you're a bit more happier today, I'm assuming, than last week.
I think that's fair to say, yeah.
With your Fresno State team basically crushing UCLA.
We'll talk more about that a little bit.
And definitely we'll get to all that week three. See, for me, week three, as we get going here, I was thinking, like, I made too big of a deal about it because Boise State lost. We'll talk about that, their Oklahoma State game. We saw Raj on TV quite a bit, so congrats on that, sort of. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, man, is this week a downer? I'm like, because I had a crazy week and weekend, so I crashed like at 8:30 last night and slept for like 12 hours and watched a bunch of games this morning. I'm like, no, the week was actually pretty good. It's just one team kind of didn't do all that great. That's all. But overall, well, it was good, right?
I would say maybe more than one team, depending on how you look at things.
True.
But, you know, I'll just give my quick Boise State thoughts real quick, just before we jump into a little later in the podcast. But I don't think that the margin of victory, I feel like the final score is deceptive. I'll leave it at that for now.
Yeah, we'll get that too. Like I said, I watched games this morning. I was debating, should I even watch this game? I did, and we'll talk later. But let's get to Utah State too. Oh, boy.
Wall-to-wall dominance.
Even though we made an error in a Chucky Keaton tweet, sorry about that, Coach.
Well, that was an extension of the Facebook cameraman's error.
Oh, okay. So did they say it was Chucky Keaton or something?
Yeah, they thought it was Chucky Keaton, and apparently it was someone else on the Utah State staff.
I looked at him like, it honestly does look a little bit like him, but it wasn't quite him. He responded. In good fun. It's okay. But it was dominant outside of that one air, I'll say, and giving up the first, weren't they down 3-0?
That's true. They were
Tennessee Tech. I pulled the highlights for just kind of our recap scoreboard thing I posted this morning. I found some pretty good YouTube channels, Matt, that have like 8-minute highlights of a game. So if you ever miss a game, folks, check out some of the links I put on tape for YouTube, where there's not just a 2-minute highlight, but a good 8 to 10 minutes of a game.
Also just give a real quick shout out to all of those anonymous people who are putting full games up on YouTube?
That too, yes. And usually they stay online too. Usually. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I was looking around. I'm like, I want more than a 90-second highlight. I want more than what the Pac-12 Network put out for the Oregon State-Nevada game. And I found a few that were a good 6-minute plus. So heroes, right?
Yes.
All right, so Utah State. All we're going to say about this game is that 73-12, had they only beat Michigan State, they'd probably be getting some votes or maybe even ranked possibly or close to it. But what you and I said about this game, we want to see running game. Check. You wanted to see Jordan Love go off and be amazing. Check. Pretty much checked every box we wanted, even defense, 12 points.
Yeah, it's really hard to find fault just because all three phases of the game were really clicking for the Aggies. You know, you mentioned, you know, the running game. They had a combined 320 yards on the ground. They were averaging well over 7 yards carry. You know, that's a plus. Jordan Love went out and went 21 of 26 for 236 yards and then 2 scores. That's a plus. And on the defensive side, they were pretty much dominant. I'm trying to count how many tackles for loss they had. I think it was something like 10 or 11. You know, the one guy that really stands out is Fualelua, who had 3.5 tackles for loss. You know, they won the turnover battle. They were pretty much just dominant. They even had another special team score from Jordan Nathan.
It's all they did was a crushing win. That's all. They beat Tennessee Tech. Great.
Yes.
They didn't make any. It's the, when you play these teams, you want to see, like I said, wall to wall coverage, dominant coverage, or not coverage, but just winning. And like I said, defense played well. Everybody played well. This won't happen again for Utah State. Well, do they play San Jose State? Just asking. Do they? Is that in the schedule?
Oh, I wish I had that in front of me.
No, they do not. That's unfortunate. There's no San Jose. Oh, yes. Nope. They do. Week before they play CSU. So there's another chance for a performance like this, but. All you want to see in this game is be healthy, get some backup some time. Because, heck, did you see what good old Henry Colombi did? 9 for 9 as quarterback?
I did. He actually looked pretty sharp in the second half.
So 7 rushing touchdowns, rushing game is there. Everything was fine. This is what you want in these type of games. So we'll see what they do next week. Because, again, they almost beat Michigan State. What did they play last week?
Last week they crushed New Mexico State.
Oh, New Mexico State, that's what it was. Yeah. They scored 133 points in 2 games. Mm-hmm. They're averaging like 50 points a game.
Yeah, and if I remember correctly, it's the first time in school history they've cracked 70 points.
Wouldn't surprise me. We'll see next week. They have Air Force. It'll be a bit tricky, but that's a good one. So keep rolling, Aggies, right? Aggie up, is that what they say?
I believe it's Aggies all the way.
Oh, I've been hashtagging Aggie up. Maybe I'll update that.
Because I think Aggie up is actually the New Mexico State hashtag.
Oh, maybe I should stop doing that then.
Yeah.
Is that a faux pas, I guess?
It might be, yeah.
All right, so let's do this. Let's go to next game, Army and Hawaii. My quest for 6-0 in September fell through. But the first drive was amazing. They went down to, what, four plays, touched long touchdown pass. They're up 28. They lose 28-21, but they're up 7-0, 7-7. And then, hey, Army threw 10 times, Matt. That's unprecedented.
Well, it's not only that they threw 10 times, but, you know, their quarterback, Kendall Hopkins, completed six of those passes. And he had 162 yards on those six completions. So they were really able to beat Hawaii over the top in a way that, you know, the other teams that they've played so far really haven't been. And they were having to play from behind more often than they've had to in these first few weeks. And when you also combine that with the fact that Army was really able to shut down the running game, you know, it was one of those instances where, you know, Dayton Furuta only had 21 yards rushing and he only had three carries. You know, nobody on the team had more than Cole McDonald's six carries, and that, I believe, is in part due to the fact that Army also had three sacks, which counts as a carry. So they were really putting the game in Cole McDonald's hands, maybe more than they wanted to, especially when you consider that they only ran 45 offensive plays. That is a huge drop off from what they had been doing in the first few weeks. And for as explosive as the offense was at certain points, you know, let's not forget, they had that first really explosive drive. They also had the last scoring drive they had, which was an 80-yard pass from McDonald to John Ursua. But between there, it was, you know, a lot of inefficiency. They were 1 of 7 on third downs. They were 0 for 2 on fourth downs. And when you compare that to what Army was able to do, they basically played the same kind of game that, you know, San Diego State fans are probably nodding, you know, there, because they were 11 of 19 on third down and 3 of 4 on fourth down. The Hawaii defense was just not able to get off the field for much of the game.
Yeah, they had difference in plays. You mentioned, what, 45 plays for Hawaii. Army ran 66 rushes, 10 passes for a grand total of 76. So mm-hmm. we have, what, 30 more plays, a lot more chances. And then you mentioned the third down conversion. That was the big deal. And I think that was the biggest thing in this game. On both sides, Hawaii went for it on fourth down on their second possession, didn't get it. They were 0-for-2 on fourth down, 1-for-7 on third downs, whereas that's where they've been converting the past couple weeks. When they played CSU, playing all those teams the past couple weeks, and Duquesne and whoever they've been playing, Navy, who came to town last week, they were getting those done. This week, they did not. Defense, like you said, 11-19 allowed, 3-of-4 on fourth down allowed. They convert a couple of those, maybe they win, but that also contributes to the amount of time because their defense is back on the field. Where when you go 3 and out, it can't convert, and then you allow Army to have those long, long drives. Like, even when Army's, like, look at their drives. They had a 14-play drive. They had 8-play drive that ended up in a missed field goal, but there were so many drives they had, like, multiple 10-plus-play drives. 4 of the 5 in the second half were 10-plus drive, or excuse me, 3 of the 5. Mm-hmm. And the first one, they punted after going 10 plays.
Yeah.
So that's a big deal. Running is a big deal. They couldn't run the ball at all. And Fred Holly and McDonald, like, Holly had two carries. That's it. 1 yard. One singular yard.
That's probably not going to get it done in the long term.
No. And we knew this Hawaii team wasn't going to be, like, top 20 team, most likely top 15, had they even won. Their offense had been good enough. But, again, we've said this in the offseason before, the defense is an issue. Look how many points versus CSU they gave up. Navy had a lot of points against this team. It's going to be – this, like you said, they're going to be entertaining, which they are because they're winning. This game wasn't a shootout, but for an Army game when they control the ball as much as they do, that's a lot of points for a game where they had it for 41 minutes, Matt, Army did.
Mm-hmm.
So Hawaii scored more than a point a minute when they had the ball.
Yeah, and the other thing is, too, is that, you know, after a couple of instances where the front seven was pretty disruptive, the other big thing from this game was that they weren't able to really be disruptive up front. They only had 2 tackles for loss. And that is kind of a step back from what they did against Navy, which runs a similar kind of offense, obviously. But it kind of makes you wonder how effective that front four is going to be in particular when they go up against some of the running heavy teams in the West Division. You know, we've obviously the two big ones are Fresno State and San Diego State, but that is one of those things where in the weeks to come, they're going to have to prove that they can do that consistently.
We don't know. Here's the thing, too. I figure with them playing Navy last week and then Army this week, they would have had a better handle against that. I know it's a different players, different scheme for a little bit, but it's very similar, that run option attack. And so I kind of figure that's more of an advantage than not. Seeing it back-to-back, you're like, oh, you're already sort of familiar with what they're doing. And it's just the defense is the issue for them. And offense stalled out way too many times.
That's true.
So Hawaii's still good. They're probably still on track for bowl game. They got Duquesne next week. I was thinking of Rice earlier, not Duquesne. Duquesne at San Jose State. Heck, they could be, not to go into it, but they'll win next week. They probably win at San Jose State. Wyoming doesn't look great because they barely won against Wofford. So there's a chance they could be 5-6-1.
Yeah, there's still a lot to look forward to, but there's still a lot of work to be done.
There's work to be done. Just the next couple weeks, it should be fine. But we'll see when they play like Nevada, who will have a lot of points. When Fresno, who can run fairly well. UNLV, San Diego State. They're still better than what we thought by a lot. And they're going to be a lot of close games because of this offense.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so next game, we have an audible here. Have you been monitoring our direct messages, Matt?
I have not.
So Raj is en route back to Nebraska from Oklahoma. He was wondering, and we're going to do this on the fly and not edit this out because we're pros. He would like to join at the end to talk about this game. Would you want to postpone the Boise game to the end of this?
Let's do that.
All right, we'll talk Boise State, New Year's Six implications afterwards. So stay for that, folks. We'll have another portion of the podcast. So let's go into the next game, which will be, if my time is correct here, it's the Wolford-Wyoming game. Is that right?
That would be one of them, yeah.
Wolford. Let's just go there because it was a terrible game.
That game nearly put me to sleep, I'm not going to lie.
Hey, if I wasn't tired enough, I would have fallen asleep even earlier yesterday.
And I'm already prone to taking mid-afternoon naps.
Yeah. They won seven. Here's a good thing. They won.
That's perfect. True.
They did play a triple option team, which is tricky, no matter what level you're at. Vanderwall did okay. 224 yards, probably threw way more than he wanted to and 42 times. They ran. Because Nico Evans is still out. You had Xavier Valade for 57 yards. Austin Conaway did all right, but defense did their thing, 14 points. But offense has to. It's I'm blaming the offense on this. That's what I'm going to say. 6-15 on fourth downs. Or should it be third downs, not fourth. That'd be amazing if they're that fourth down conversion, go for it 15 times. But I'm just going to say the offense. That's all it is, right? Offense has to get better.
So there was the first scoring drive that they had, which was about midway through the second quarter. Johanna Gaifan had forced a fumble, and they had recovered it. So they were set up basically on Wolford's doorstep. And they basically just could not move the ball at all.
The powerful Wolford defense.
Exactly. And you know, when you go and you look, and yeah, missing Nico Evans hurts. But you know, at some point, injuries aren't going to be an excuse. You know, being able to average just 3.3 yards per carry is not going to be an excuse. They just weren't able to move the ball much throughout the afternoon. I believe they had like six different drives that went 10 yards or less.
It's an FCS team as well. It's like, come on.
Yeah.
You can't get 10 yards on first and goal.
Oh, yeah, and they were also outgained through three quarters.
Rocket Ismail Jr. saved today for the victory at the end.
Mm-hmm.
So should we call him Rocket Ismail or should we call him Rakib Ismail?
That's a good question.
I don't know, because his dad's Rocket Ismail.
Mm-hmm.
It's just simple enough, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's just, I don't know that there are any easy answers for this offense, especially when you consider that the Wyoming defense played a pretty good game. You know, they only had one sack. But they did force three turnovers. You know, part of the problem is that they were only able to turn those three turnovers into 3 points.
I will say this. The last turnovers were 12 seconds left, so.
That's true. Yeah, I was going to mention that just now.
Okay.
It's just, you know, they are still getting the same kinds of opportunities that the defense was able to give them last year. And kind of like last year, they've been a little bit hit or miss as far as being able to do anything with those things.
I'll give you one positive thing here. It was 14-10. Wolford punts. First off, interception. Okay, they force interception or get an interception. So Wolford gets the ball back. Wolford punts. There's about 2 minutes left in the game. They go 80 yards and get a touchdown to end the game, essentially. That's a good positive. They have a nice drive. 13 plays, 80 yards, and a touchdown. That's obviously very good. That's probably the only good thing out of the game. Probably the best. It was clearly the best drive of the game. So they got that done, which is great. But all these punts, all these no converting points after turnovers, just not scoring points against an FCS defensive team or FCS team. Like, they, not to say they put up more points versus New Mexico State than this.
I mean, I'll give credit to Vanderwall because he too did step up in the fourth quarter. He was 13 of 22 for 148 yards in that game-winning pass. But we have really yet to see him put together a full 60 minutes. And I think until he does that, that offense is still going to be held back a little bit, no matter what else they do.
So his offense is worse than last year, right?
For the moment, I think you kind of have to make that argument. Yeah, because, I mean, now that he's played four games, Vanderwall is only completing 53% of his passes.
Josh Allen-esque.
Well, he's only averaging 5.3 yards per attempt, and he has two touchdowns and two interceptions. His quarterback rating is 99.99.
That's not good.
It's not good so far.
Oh, man.
So he's going to have to be a little bit better. He's going to have to show more of what we saw in that fourth quarter. But I think if you're looking for a positive sign, it's the fact that he was able to put that, you know, put those couple of drives together.
That is the one good thing, and they'll obviously need more of those. So we'll see what they do going forward. But yeah, they're 2-2, right? That's good enough, right?
I think they're still good enough to give some teams headaches, but the offense is going to still have to find some answers.
At the very least, the offense needs to have long drives, even if they don't score points, to give the defense a break. At least. That's like setting the bar so low, though. You know what I mean? Like, give us six plays, offense. Six plays a drive, and we'll be good. All right, let's go to another disappointing game. We'll go to Florida 48, Colorado State 10.
That's putting it mildly. Disappointing.
Hey, they're not going back-to-back versus SEC school. So how many one cool thing about the game, Florida offered free tickets to those who had to flee Hurricane Florence to maybe give them a couple hours of fun and try not to think about the storm crashing down in the Carolina area. So there's that. So hopefully some people got to spend a few hours hanging out. Colin Hill played, which me and our buddy Justin Michael said should not happen, but that did happen.
And he wasn't actually very good.
2 of 8, 23 yards. Marvin Kinsey's ran pretty well. That's nice. Here's the thing. I barely watched this game. If you look at what the Florida did offensively, they did basically nothing.
Is this the worst half of football that a team will play all year long?
Which half, the first or second?
The first half.
Possibly.
It was brutal, man. I mean, two fumbles lost, two missed field goals. And granted, the field goals that Wyatt Bryant missed weren't gimmies.
And
the first one was
punt return.
Well, the first one was 41. The second one was 53. So it's not like they were chip shots or anything like that. But it's just, you've got to take advantage of opportunities like that, especially when the defense was doing its job for most of that first half. I think I saw the stat where Felipe Franks had missed his first six passes, and so his quarterback rating for that moment in time was something like negative 33.
That's so, boy.
Like, you can't let that guy beat you eventually. And that's exactly what he did in the second half, because he started 0 for 6, but then I think he was 8 for his next 9, and that's all he needed to do to beat this team. Like, the offense wasn't even outgained by that much.
No.
It was like a difference of maybe 30 yards between the two offenses. They ran twice as many plays. That's kind of the problem, is they weren't as efficient. They were just bad all around.
8 of 20 on third downs, Matt.
Yeah.
1.7 yards per rush. The two special teams touchdowns against them.
Well, like, and that rushing number is skewed by the fact that, oh, sacks. By the way, they also gave up 5 sacks, which totaled 41 yards.
Well, Kinsey did all right. He had 15 for 79, which is pretty good. And Preston Williams showed up with 9 for 106. And then a few deep bombs on there. ESPN lists McBride twice, Trey McBride twice. So I figured, maybe he did well. No, he did not throw for 300 yards. They had thrown through about the 240. But they had a couple decent passing plays. But you're right, it was based on special teams, the two touchdowns, and defense did fine. Like, when they fumbled the ball twice, they held Florida to two field goals. So it could have been maybe add another 6 points on there. And this Florida offense isn't good, as you can tell by the actual time they had the ball. They did not move the ball very well, because actual touchdown drives that were not a special teams play, they went a solid 5 for 65 for a touchdown. They had a 6-play drive, which is okay, 44 yards. Those are basically – there are a couple – like another drive is four. They had three total drives that led in a touchdown on offense.
Mm-hmm.
And their field position on those were really good, like about the 40-ish range, 30 to 40 range. And so they were getting good field position and only needed a handful of plays to get a touchdown. And so
I feel really bad for KJ Carter-Samuels.
He did pretty good. He did reasonably well.
They put a lot in his hands especially to try to convert those third downs. He was 12 of 16 on third down.
That's good. That's really good.
Except the average third down that they had was nearly 9 yards. They were just at a disadvantage all game long, and the opportunities that they got, they basically shot themselves in the foot at every opportunity.
Is this serious question? Is this more coaching type stuff with these chances that they're getting and not converting?
I have no idea. I'm kind of thinking that it is, because we've seen the individual performances that the Rams have been able to have so far. You know, we mentioned Carter Samuels. He did complete almost 2/3 of his passes again, and he did have 217 yards and a score. Mm-hmm. You know, they did have a couple of nice individual performances on defense. Like VJ Banks had an interception in the first half. That was a pretty heads up play, mm-hmm. if you're asking me. It's just, I don't know. Yeah. I don't know if there's one thing you can pin it on at this point.
Well, there's no play caller besides Mike Bobo, and the offensive line's not doing their job. Florida had 9 TFLs and 5 sacks.
Yeah.
And even with the 5 sacks, like you said, Carter Samuels still completed 2/3 of his passes. It's defense is not – well, this isn't even a defensive effort, because defense did okay. Like I said, there's only a handful of drives where Florida – outside of getting good field position because they had to punt on offense for Colorado State, the defense didn't really give up all that much.
Because that's another thing. Florida also had like a field position advantage of about 13 yards.
Yeah.
You know, Colorado State on average was starting at their own 26. Florida was starting at their own 39.
Yeah, that's where those three touchdown drives came from, that 30 to 50 range midfield. But if you look at this, like in the second half, Colorado State, yeah, they're down 27-10 or 27-3. They score a touchdown, force a punt. Then they forced two punts, but then they had the special teams miscue, fumble. It's like, geez, I don't know.
Would it be fair to say that Mike Bobo now has the hottest seat of any coach in the Mountain West?
I don't know. Brett Brennan, man, they're pretty awful.
We'll talk about that more in a minute.
Do you ever go to the Hot Seat Coach website?
I do not.
I'm going to pull it up real quick and see, because they probably updated it from today. I want to take a quick look and see. Coach's Hot Seat 2018. Do you want to take a guess who number one is?
Oh, is it Chad Morris?
No, Urban Meyer.
Oh, well, yeah, I guess that makes sense.
Let's see. Coach's Hot Seat as of September 26th right now. I don't know how often they update, but this can't be too accurate, because they have, like, Klonny Sitake, number 4 BYU, and they beat Wisconsin. He's perfectly fine. Brett Brennan's the highest Mountain West coach on this list here. They don't even have – on their homepage, they have all the little photos. They have Tony Sanchez on there as well for some reason. So I don't know what the deal is with that. This doesn't seem the best website to be looking at the moment, because they seem weird. But as for your question at hand, I would say yes. Why would it?
I mean, I think it maybe helps a little bit that their immediate forthcoming schedule is a little more manageable, because they do get to go home and host Illinois State. Although at this point, I don't know that would be a guarantee with the way this team has been playing recently. And then they get to go to San Jose State and then home versus New Mexico. But I don't know, man. Let's just put it this way. I think I'm officially retiring from leading the Rams bandwagon this fall.
There you go. That works for me. All right, next game. Where should we go next? We have a lot of similar times. Is it Oregon State, Nevada? Or sure.
San Jose.
Yeah, we'll go Oregon State, Nevada. We'll get back.
Let's do that.
My ESPN list goes in ranked teams order, so it's not chronological order after games have gone final. So first off, good for Nevada, 37-35, beating Oregon State to extend their, is it nation's longest road losing streak at 21? If it's not the longest, it's up there.
It's pretty close, yeah.
So, and Nevada almost blew this game, too. They had a pretty sizable lead where they were at one point, they were up 30-7 and nearly lost this game. First half, 30-7 in the first half and almost lost this game.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know where you start with this game. It was a really weird game in a lot of respects. Because, you know, in the first half especially, the offense was off to a great start, especially Ty Ganji. I mean, you know, before halftime, he was 11 of 17, 151 yards and two touchdowns. Mm-hmm. And then after halftime, the wheels just kind of fell off the passing game. He only finished 17 of 35.
Maybe picked him up a little bit, figured it out.
Maybe. I didn't actually get a chance to watch too much of this game, but I think it helps a little bit of the, you know, his inefficiency was offset by the fact that the running game did finally come back a little bit. And a lot of that credit goes to Toa Taua, who finished 12 carries, 81 yards, and a touchdown.
And 1-for-1 with a 6-yard pass.
That too.
You're a hero if you watch this game because have you seen the second half drive chart?
I did.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 consecutive punts.
Well, you know what, though? That's a credit to the Nevada defense.
Yes, I will give them credit, but it still is like, come on, really? 8 punts?
Because it was one of those instances where they really made Oregon State one-dimensional to have to try to throw to win this game. And, you know, maybe credit to the Beavers because they almost did it. Do you happen to know what happened to Connor Blunt, though?
I didn't see. I just know they played two quarterbacks and both played well.
Yeah, because between Blunt and Jake Luton, who I thought had lost the starting job, the two of them combined for 459 yards, which is not great.
No,
but they really needed both of those guys, especially after halftime, just because, you know, in the fourth quarter they didn't really get a chance to use the running game all that much. And so maybe, yeah, you could say the defense survived in some respects. But let's not forget they also racked up 11 tackles for loss and 5 sacks as well. So they were getting to the quarterback. They were being disruptive. They were really making Oregon State work for it. And, you know, like they did last week against Vanderbilt, even though it didn't work out, their playmakers made plays too. Malik Reed had a very critical fumble recovery early in the first half that – you know, when you look at the final score, that made the difference because they were up 30-7 by that point, mm-hmm. and they needed that one last Kelton Moore run in the fourth quarter to really put them over the top. But their defense stepped up. They made plays. They shut down Oregon State. By the way, the Beavers were only 3 of 15 on third downs as well. So, yeah, maybe it was a little bit rough around the edges, and it wasn't without some kind of controversy, which we'll talk about in a minute. But the defense got it done, and the offense did just enough to put them over the finish line.
Really quick, Jake Luton hurt his ankle. That's why they played both quarterbacks.
Oh, okay.
And then also, do we need to talk about the final field goal?
Let's talk about that for a minute.
It was no good, clearly, because it would have been a game winner. Somebody posted a video to us on Twitter feed. Apparently, it looks like there probably should have been roughing the kicker.
Yeah, I could kind of see that.
Because I'm going to pull up the video again, but typically if you're kicking a field goal, when your leg's up in the air, you're going to be kind of protected.
Yeah.
And this was a kick where it was kind of his leg, other leg wasn't there. Like he was still extending that leg, mm-hmm. and he got hit basically in the knee from his plant foot. That's probably should have been probably not roughing, but I don't know. Would it be roughing or running into the kicker?
I think if it's as mild as it looked, it's probably running into the kicker. But nonetheless, you know, that's 5 yards, and that's not nothing when you're trying to set up for a game-winning attempt.
Yeah, you're down to – it was a – how far was this field goal? I mean, I wish I should have that in front of me before I start talking. It would have put them at the 10-yard line. So it would have been a 29-yarder from a 34-yarder.
Yeah.
The 34-yarder is makeable. I didn't see it live. I saw this thing after, and the video was sent to us. It was not – probably like off the cell phone, off the TV type deal.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they make it. I don't know. You know what I mean? Because it's 5 yards. That's a big deal. And maybe he got bumped, or he did get bumped, excuse me, and that happened. So I probably would have given the penalty, give him 5 more yards, and maybe that's a 38-37 loss for the Wolfpack.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think Wolfpack fans are complaining, though.
No, they're not, but I can see Oregon State. They're on the road. They lose to Nevada. Losing streak gets extended to 21 games. And, yeah, I will give them credit. You're right. The second half, the first handful of drives is really good, so that's good for them. They're a game. Here's the thing, too. At non-conference play, 2-1 is kind of where we thought they would be at. We thought maybe beat Vanderbilt, road game, but 2-1 is not far off from what we were. I just think last week versus Nevada was just not a good showing by the offense at all, which doesn't help.
Well, and one other thing to watch, especially in the weeks to come, was that they lost Brendan O'Leary Orange in the second half of this game as well.
That's right. And I don't think there's an update on him yet, I don't believe.
No, he gave an update on Twitter. He said that he was appreciative of everybody's concern. And while I'm tempted to say that Nevada will probably be fine, if only because we know they have so many playmakers, you know, not just McLean Mannix, but, you know, they have some other young guys who stepped up, like Romeo Doubs had 2 catches for 38 yards. But that's still going to be a significant loss if he misses significant time. But that's something that bears watching.
All right, I'm watching that field goal again. This should not be a penalty. Here's why. Also, really quick, Nevada, settle down with celebrating so hard after the win.
No, I encourage
you. Go for it. Interesting to watch this one highlight. It seems they're a bit too excited. Well, maybe not. I guess if it's a game-deciding kick, end of the game, to decide to get victory or loss. Okay, that's fair. They're excited. Let them have it. I don't care. Do what you want. Rush the field, fans. I don't care. If you win 50-0 versus an FCS team, rush the field. Go for it, right?
Don't listen to Jeremy. Celebrate. Yeah, that's what makes this goofy game so great.
I apologize. So I'm watching this again. Here's why I can see where they wouldn't call it, and I can see where you may think to call it. The kicker didn't really didn't hang his foot out there, but if you look at it, he fell over. He tried to act a little bit, where it looks worse than what it was, where he fell forward over the guy. But his other foot basically did hit the ground at some point moments before the guy was trying for the block. So that's what looks like why it was not called.
All right.
So it's on the – where I found if you go to a good video on some of the ESPN just recap page over there. So go check that out if you want to say you're right or I'm wrong. But that's where I saw it, and that's my non-expertise refereeing opinion comes into play.
All right.
Should we go on to Oregon San Jose State, who did cover this game?
They did cover for the second straight week.
That's the congrats they get, or the credit for, hey, don't – well, I guess gamblers, if you're inclined to take the Spartans to cover, go for it. 35-22, they lose to Oregon. And, hey, two quarterbacks this game. Josh Love and Montel Aaron got to see action. Josh Love played okay?
Yeah.
Question mark?
Yeah, I mean, he was – what was he? He was
– under 50% passing.
50, yeah, I mean, yeah.
Two picks.
But he did have 238 yards, so they were finding big plays. Yeah, you know, there were three different receivers who had at least one catch 30 yards, including, like we talked about in our preview, Bailey Gaither, 6 catches, 90 yards.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah, they're finding stuff. It's if you watch this game on the Pac-12 Network, I salute you because I don't have Pac-12 Network. But Oregon's really good. But it's like when you look at the defense stepped up well for the Spartans because – Justin Herbert had 2 picks, was picked off twice, which helped him out. The running game was held pretty low in check, only 134 yards on nearly 50 rushing attempts. And there's a couple of deep bombs is kind of what hurt them, man, like a 60-yarder, 39-yarder, a couple 20-yarders. So the deep passing game was an impact in this game for why part of the reason why San Jose State lost. But they couldn't – same thing with like the other game you're talking about. They couldn't convert points after that pick where they had the ball. Yeah, they had to go – down the field, but they get a pick in that second possession, but then Oregon gets back and goes, touchdown, we're gonna score here, not you.
it would have been really easy for them to pack it in once they went down 14-0.
Yeah, because it was 14-0 pretty early.
But if anybody remembers our San Jose State preview, like, this is kind of the game that I was thinking about when I was thinking about their interesting pieces starting to come into their own, you know, just being more competitive.
Yeah.
And when you look at the final results, they were fairly competitive. You know, they had 5 tackles for loss. They did break up 6 passes. Do you realize they've already matched the number of interceptions that they had all last year?
Good for them.
They had 2 from Jesse Osuna and Dakari Monroe. That's a positive. You know, maybe you want to see the offense be a little more efficient because they still were only 4 of 16 on third down, so they weren't able to stay on the field as much as you might like them to. But they didn't get blown out. You know, they got to within, I don't know, 28-12, I think was probably the closest they got. But they were in it into the third quarter, which I think is a lot better than a lot of prognosticators would have expected.
Yeah, they were hanging around. I wouldn't say they're in it, but they weren't getting embarrassed.
That's true.
And even because when it was 28-6, it could have been terrible quickly. But then here's where it kind of changed for them. They get the interception, but they don't get any points. They go two plays, no yards, which I don't know what the deal is with this ESPN chart because it seems odd. How do you go two plays and no yards? Oh, sorry. I'm looking at it backwards because I'm dummy. Sorry. I said, oh, man. This is quality work you're getting here, folks, from us. Oh, no. What I was looking at was they threw the interception, and then the defense forced Oregon to like a four and out. Mm-hmm. Because they're like, we're not going to score, set off for field goals, 28-6. They stop Oregon there. Then they go, this is a pretty good drive. They go seven plays, 82 yards. It's a pretty big deal. So there's a couple of drives here that show that they can move the ball. Whether it's Jordan Love Josh Love, or it's Montel Aaron. They're playing two quarterbacks for who knows why, because Josh Love got the start of this game. I don't get that. I don't know what they're doing, but they had a few drives here and there where they looked good enough. So are they going to win a game this year? I don't know. At least they're not getting blown out. Maybe. They get to play Nevada.
Yeah, there's still definitely a lot of prove it when it comes to these Spartans, but this is definitely a step in the right direction.
So we'll see what they do next time. But they're like you mentioned, Matt, they're showing a few pieces here and there where they can say, hey, we have a good receiver here. We have a guy who can sort of throw the ball. Defense is getting better. And again, they still don't have Tylan Evans, and we'll see how long he's out. And that's another piece that maybe that'll help them get a win if he's able to come back and do something decent.
Well, we should also mention that Josh Oliver had one of the better athletic catches of the weekend as well.
The tight end. That's right.
Yeah. 6 catches, 41 yards. And if you haven't seen that touchdown, go look it up on Twitter. It's a pretty good one.
Twitter, it's probably in our highlight post we did too. I put a bunch of highlights for every game. So go scroll through that and see what we can find, because who doesn't like awesome catches, right?
Yes. Everyone likes that.
There's a close one in them when we talk to Boise later with Raj, but it's a one that was a close one. All right. Mm-hmm. Should we go to, where should we go to next?
Let's go to the Rio Grande rivalry.
That's right. So I stopped watching this game, and I probably shouldn't have, because it was close. And then, hey, New Mexico, let's just score a lot of points and win 42-25 and not worry about a comeback against the Aggies.
In a lot of ways, it struck me as being very similar to like the inverse of last year's game.
Yeah, because New Mexico State got up to, what, a 27-2 lead or something like that, and they stormed back. But, yeah. Same points in the second half, essentially, where they scored a lot, but they were ahead and pulling away instead of trying to frantically come back.
Well, it wasn't just that. It was, to me, the story of the game is turnovers. And New Mexico had 5 interceptions.
That's got to be some record almost for them.
And they also, well, no, they didn't actually force any fumbles, but they did have the 5 interceptions. They turned those 5 interceptions into 21 points.
That's how you win, folks.
That's exactly how you win, including kind of the game ceiling pick 6 with 30 seconds left from Marcus Hayes.
That's like in the end zone, essentially. He took it back.
It was about 60 yards.
Okay, well, whatever. Maybe it's a different pick I saw. They had so many, I can't got to keep track, right?
Yeah, but I think one of the other big takeaways was in our preview podcast, I mentioned that I was a little hesitant about the offense's ability to kind of move the chains without Tavaka Tuioa under center. And I would say, by and large, they kind of addressed pretty much all of the concerns that I had, because Sherron Jones, you know, he wasn't totally explosive. He was only 12 of 19 for 127 yards, did have an interception, but for the most part, he did take care of the ball. And Tyrone Owens did step up. You know, he had 30 carries, but he did have 110 yards and a touchdown. So they mostly took care of the football. The defense stepped up big time. It wasn't just the interceptions, but you know, someone like Rashad Epting had one of the bigger performances of the night from any team in the Mountain West. He had 2.5 sacks. And as a team, they had 9 tackles for loss and really kind of took it to New Mexico State almost from the get-go.
Is this defensive efforts possibly the best for the Bob Davey era?
I guess it depends on how you look at it, but it would definitely be up there.
I'm just saying, 5 picks, 9 TFLs. Yeah, 25 points. It's not great, but 3 sacks. They They made New Mexico State go to three different quarterbacks in this game. They held the running attack to under 4 yards per carry.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say it's up there, right?
Yeah, I mean, they allowed the Aggies 4.84 yards per play, which was something that they hadn't done against an FBS opponent in 2 years. The last time I could see a defensive performance like that was in their win back in 2016 against Louisiana Monroe.
So how are we feeling about for the Lobos then rest of the way a little bit? We're early, three games in. This was a game that could have gone either way at 2-1 overall for the record. They got Liberty next week. They'll probably be 3-1. And then who knows, right?
I think as long as they can take care of the football, they're going to have a chance in a lot of these games.
Okay. That's easy to say, right? Don't turn the ball over. Also, yeah. Did we not mention Amir Davis? Did his name come up yet?
His name did not come up.
Four touchdowns. Rushing pretty touchdowns. Pretty good. So, yeah, you had Owens with 100-plus, but he had four touchdowns on the ground. So, good for him.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we ready to go to San Diego State and Arizona State?
Yes.
Or should we do Prairie View UNLV really quick? Let's do Prairie View UNLV. Similar to other Utah State FCS matchups, UNLV blew out Prairie View A&M 46-17, did not pull a Howard, and they're running the ball as we thought they would. And the biggest thing, the running back, DeJuana Tucker, I believe that's correct,
mm-hmm.
He's a pretty good player. Only had 61 yards, and he had 200-plus the first two games each.
And half of that came on one run.
Correct. And also, I was reading a couple recaps because I kind of tuned in and out of these games. They only gave him, like, I think, three or four carries in the whole first half mm-hmm. when it was still – not that it's close, but they were down 34-0 at halftime, but they didn't give him a chance to run at all. It's partly you're playing an FBS team. You're down big. You want to pass and get back because their quarterback didn't do all that great, completed about a third – a third of their passes, but Armani Rogers, sheesh, four rushing touchdowns, five total. Lexington Thomas, Charles Williams only played a little bit, which is fine, 7 for 22, but this is UNLV, like Utah State. When you're playing these bad teams, you just got to take care of business and not worry about keeping it close like Wyoming did versus Wolford.
Yeah, they threw the ball 22 times in the first half, and Prairie View's quarterback Jalen Morton only completed five passes.
Not going to win.
Not going to win. And DeJuana Tucker only had seven carries in that first half, too.
Okay. It was very few.
Yeah.
I guess one concern, don't go 5 of 15 on third downs, UNLV.
Yeah, maybe not.
Or turn it over three times, but whatever. 4-4 and fourth down is a pretty good makeup for that third down conversion being terrible.
Yeah.
And... yeah, they did what they did. They ran the ball well. They didn't need to pass it all. Even though Rodgers, I'd like his percentage to be a bit higher. But it's a win. They won well. And moving on to the next game. They are now sitting at 2-1, so good for them.
Mm-hmm.
All right, now let's go to Arizona State, San Diego State, the Herm Bowl.
Fascinating game.
This game, first quarter, defensive battle in the first quarter.
It was a defensive battle for very long stretches of this game.
It was. I was watching, getting ready this morning, watching this game. The first quarter, no points, back and forth. I will say this. We probably shouldn't make fun of Arizona State too much more because Manny Wilkins did pretty well. 341, a couple touchdowns. The Aztecs rush defense is what was huge in this game.
Mm-hmm.
What they normally do, they held, Benjamin to, 21 yards. They had to go in the air, and that's the way Arizona State was able to keep pace this game because they were able to be very successful passing the ball.
That's true. But even so, N'Keal Harry didn't quite go off the way that I was worried that he might. You know, he did have 9 catches, but he only had 86 yards.
And a touchdown, too. That's still pretty good. Well, but then you have, Frank Darby go for 127.
Mm-hmm.
Including an
ill-fated catch, which we'll talk about in a minute.
Let's just get to that now. Go for it. You discuss that ill-fated catch there. Let's jump around. It's fine. We do that.
So if you didn't watch the game, and I'm sure that there are going to be San Diego State fans out there screaming that I'm getting something about this wrong. But essentially what happened is on their last drive, Arizona State is moving the ball down the field, and Wilkins connects with Darby on a long pass. And I think he would have been down definitely with goal to go, with less than a minute to go. But what happened was it was 4th and 10. But what happened is that Trenton Thompson got called for targeting. And so they went to review. Obviously, Thompson got ejected. They went to review. And what happened was that they ruled the pass incomplete.
Oh,
So even though they were able to move the ball forward 15 yards, you know, there's a huge difference between 15 yards and 45. So Wilkins had to throw up, you know, one last kind of desperate Hail Mary, and San Diego State was able to knock it down and win the game. And, you know, people were kind of joking, yeah, there's probably going to be a rule change after the season or something like that.
Why?
Well, because they were saying, they were making the argument like, yeah, targeting is probably going to be a spot foul now.
Why?
That's a good question. I don't know why. All I know is that that's some, like, seriously heads-up playmaking.
Do you think he did it on purpose?
I don't know if that was his intent, but maybe somewhere subconsciously, like he knew it was fourth down and that if he could dislodge the ball, that, you know, the Aztecs would get the ball back, they'd kneel on it and be game over.
Because
so,
it's not going to be a spot foul, because what stops him from doing a pass interference? What stops him from doing a face mask? Because NFL, it's a spot foul for PI.
That's true. What's going to stop him from doing horse interference, and it would have accomplished the same thing.
Yeah, incomplete pass, 15 yards. Okay. Because this is clearly a close play. That was. Here's the thing, too. Would this have been reviewed had he not been a penalty in question? Would they have reviewed it to see if he caught the ball?
I think if he had already been called for targeting, yeah, I think it's an automatic review because they have to determine whether or not.
No, I mean, what I'm saying is, had it not been targeting, would they have reviewed that he caught it or not? Because how close it was.
I'm not sure how that works exactly, so I don't want to say one way or the other.
Because you can review any play in college, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm saying is, like, oh, it's a questionable call. You're going to run up to the line to get a playoff just because? That's what I'm thinking. Like, would they have called that if it would have been – like, would they have looked at the play again? Because it was initially ruled a catch, right?
Yes.
But that's odd, too, because they reviewed it because it's targeting. They happened to see something else.
Mm-hmm.
Because this happens. It's pretty rare this happens. You'll see either NFL or college, you're reviewing play A, but then they see a side note, or not play A, but portion A, but then they see a portion B, like, oh, hey, we missed this. What is this? Will this impact the play or impact our initial call? Because I've seen calls where exactly like this one, where it's like, it may have been targeted or something, where instead of them ruling if it's incomplete pass or not, they will say, no, he caught it. It was something where it's a catch and fumble or something completely different, or maybe even targeting came into play. And so it's just an odd situation that this happened where there was targeting called. It's an automatic review, and you can review the whole play. That's the point. Mm-hmm. Maybe if there is a rule change possibly, maybe you review what you're only reviewing.
I mean, other than that, though, I mean, I feel like it's unfair to say that it came down to just the one play, because the Aztecs stepped up in critical situations pretty much all night long. Like, one of the things that stood out to me, and I believe it was midway through this first half, or actually late in the first half, the Sun Devils have fourth down at the San Diego State 15. And Miles Cheatham, who I singled out in our preview, is saying, I think he's going to have an important game. He stepped up. He sacks Wilkins to force a turnover on downs. And then Ryan Agnew, even though he was kind of rough around the edges pretty much all night long, I think he only completed 50% of his passes and he only had 129 yards. Mm-hmm. But like you mentioned, is he going to be able to put together a Chapman-type drive that we've seen? And that's exactly what he did on that drive. They went 11 plays, 85 yards in a minute and a half. And that was the touchdown that was able to give them the lead that they never really relinquished.
That's true. Agnew had a Chapman-esque game as well. No turnovers.
Actually, I should correct myself. They tied the game.
That's right.
But I think that that's one of those sequence of plays where, you know, maybe just as much as that targeting penalty really shifted the game in San Diego State's favor.
Yeah, and also like Agamemnon had a Chapman type game, 50% efficient, no turnovers. And also, we also wondered, what's this Chase Jasmine character going to do? Oh, just 19 for 112 and a touchdown.
Yeah, I think it's pretty fair to say San Diego State's going to go as far as the running game could take them.
Exactly, and it wasn't anything skewy or wacky where he had a huge 60, 70, 80 yard run. As long as only 20.
Mm-hmm.
And so Washington had his typical 27 average carry right in that area. We didn't know he was going to go for 35. That's pretty tough to do. So they beat Arizona State, who is ranked, not ranked anymore. Aztecs getting a couple votes here and there. And this is a good game, too, because this was back and forth. They had to get the two-point conversion in the game because they scored 11 points that fourth quarter.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a good win. Arizona State's better than we thought. We're sort of just the Herm Edwards joke is kind of fun, but this is a game where we weren't sure they'd win because the backup quarterback, they were only 4 of 15 on third downs. They had too many penalties at 9. I guess the last one would have been 8 for 70 if that not reviewed. They lost a turnover battle and still won.
That's true.
So overall, it was a pretty good game for them.
It was.
Yeah. It's a good one. It's one of these games where it's kind of like the Stanford game last year. Super close throughout, and a few plays made a difference. They had the long drive, like you said. Just no power outage, which is thankful.
Yeah.
All right. Do we have any more games to go through at the moment, or we need to...
Of course we do.
Oh. I closed my schedule up here. UCLA gets trounced by Fresno State in the Rose Bowl.
38-14.
Is trounce a good enough word? Because I stopped watching at halftime this morning because I'm like, oh, this is out of hand.
Trounce is a good word. It's probably not used enough.
Also, what I did notice in this game, watching first a little bit, UCLA was comfortable letting Marcus McMarion throw whatever he wanted within 10 yards, and Fresno State took it and took that and went drive, 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 pass, pass, pass for touchdowns.
I mean, I just want to preface everything by just kind of saying this is the team that I expected to see last week.
What was the difference then? What was the difference, do you believe? Opponent or game plan or what?
I mean, maybe some of it had to do with the opponent because we knew coming in that UCLA had some pretty glaring questions along the offensive line as far as how well their defensive line would face against a pretty decent running game. And Fresno State just basically took them behind the woodshed from the first quarter. And even though they let them back into the game a little bit in the middle of the game, it was only 16-14 early in the third quarter. I never really felt like the Bulldogs were going to let this one slip away just because the defense was dominant. They held UCLA to only 4.9 yards per play. That's a huge win. Mm-hmm. They held Dorian Thompson-Robinson, who I was concerned would be dangerous with his arm and his legs. He only had 200 yards combined passing and running. That's a huge win. They sacked him once. They forced a few tackles for loss. They held UCLA to 1 of 10 on third down, so they were able to get them off the field.
Good.
And the offense took a huge step forward from what they did against Minnesota last week, and that's pretty much on all fronts. Jordan Mims stepped up. He had 85 yards on 20 carries. Keyshawn Johnson had another nice game, 8 catches, 85 yards. Marcus McMarion, 22 of 33, 270 yards, 5 total touchdowns.
He pulled a Jerome Bettis there, 9 for 16, 4 rushing touchdowns.
Yeah, they were saying on the radio broadcast that I believe he was the first Fresno State quarterback ever to score 4 rushing touchdowns. And, I mean, they were basically saying that they broke the Bruins' will in the second half. And I kind of can't disagree, because if you look at what they did, especially that they didn't actually score on their next-to-last drive, but do you see that in the drive chart? 13 plays, 40 yards, 9 minutes and 15 seconds?
We're just toying with UCLA. I think what their point was to maybe, if they keep the drive going as to try to score a touchdown only, maybe the clock will run out, maybe it won't. Who cares if we give up on downs deep in their own territory?
They just beat UCLA up and down the field for 60 minutes, which was kind of what I've expected to see all along. And that, I think, is what still makes them a dark horse for a New Year's Day bowl berth.
We'll get that later. You know a game we're missing this year that's not going to happen in the Pac-12?
What's that?
We do not get UCLA and Oregon State.
Oh, that's a bummer.
Okay, I know this is – we don't talk Pac-12 a ton, but I'm looking at the Bruins' schedule and how bad they've been playing. They might go 1-11, and their win might be against Cal.
Oof.
Arizona's pretty bad too, but Colorado looks pretty good. They play Washington. Then they got Cal, Arizona, which we'll see. Arizona got thumped by Houston recently. Utah's mm-hmm. pretty good, at Oregon, at ASU, USC, then Stanford. Chip Kelly might be going 2-10 this year if he's lucky.
Ouch.
Hot seat? Does that count as a hot seat there on the hot seat coach?
No, I think he's got to have some time to rebuild.
Yeah, he will. But still, if you're UCLA, you should never go 2-10.
I mean, I think that Fresno State still definitely has some things to work on. Like, they were maybe penalized more than Jeff Tedford would like, 8 for 53.
Yeah, that was
including one that erased a very nice run from Jordan Mims that was nearly 50 yards. So, yeah, there's still some stuff to work on. And coming home against Toledo in a couple weeks is going to be another non-conference test. But I think there's a lot for Bulldogs fans to feel a lot better about, especially after last week's disappointment.
All right. Any last words on this game?
No, I think I'm good.
Well, let's do this. Let's take a quick timeout, and we'll bring in our buddy Raj to talk Boise, Oklahoma State. He was there, and he has some stories to tell. So we'll talk about that momentarily, folks. All right, now it's for the big game. Put it till the end because we have our good guest here. We have our good buddy Raj Prabal, who does Boise State stuff, who – gained a lot of followers on Twitter for pulling some shenanigans out there in Stillwater. Raja Bleeds Blue on Twitter. That's R-A-J-A Bleeds Blue. So give him a follow. Let's see if we can get you to 1,000 pretty soon. We'll get you up higher because you're about...
That would be pretty cool.
You're at 684 right now. So first off, you made the drive to this game. How far is the drive?
Well, so I live in Lincoln, Nebraska now. So it's a 5.5-hour drive. And I was planning to do that just Friday morning at a hotel in Stillwater on Friday and Saturday. And the cool thing about the hotel was most of the people that came to the game stayed in Oklahoma City or Tulsa. I booked my hotel for Stillwater the day after I came back from the Oregon Bowl game last year because I knew Stillwater would not have a bunch of hotels.
Exactly.
So so I had my hotel in Stillwater. And Thursday after I got off of work, I got the itch. I couldn't wait anymore. So I ended up driving down and staying in Manhattan, Kansas for the night and just kind of walking around in Kansas State territory.
There you go. That's not a bad drive. I go to Vegas for stuff. It's about 6 hours, so it's a it's a good drive. That's not too bad. So you drove the game. We saw you on TV quite a bit. So before we get to that, who spotted you with the flags? That wasn't your video. You walking around campus.
Yeah, you know, I didn't want to really kind of make it about me. Like what I did was I Ubered to downtown. There was a pretty well known bar called Eskimo Joe's, and Jeremy, when you interviewed the guy from the Oklahoman,
Scott Wright.
Yeah, Scott Wright. He said Eskimo Joe's, and that's what everyone was telling me. So I had the flag. So I'm like, all right, I'm just going to take the flag. I had the face paint. I'm like, not the face paint, not on the first night. And I just Ubered down there with the flag, and I got a drink at a bar. And then I'm like, you know what? Before I start drinking a lot more, it was only like 4 o'clock. I'm like, I'm going to make a couple of laps around campus. And I've done that before. I've done that at, UW and Autzen Stadium. So I'm like, I'm just going to walk around and look around. And I had my flag, and I didn't want to take pictures of myself and post it. But I'm like, you know what would be cool if someone like, you know, I was even thinking to myself, it'd be pretty cool. And I did not check my phone at all. I probably walked around for about an hour. And I'm like, it'd be pretty cool if someone took a picture and put it up. And I guess Barstool, Oklahoma State did that. And I thought they would delete it because they captioned it. They captioned it by saying, hopefully this guy makes it out of campus. You know, kind of threatening, but you know, the fans there couldn't have been cooler. I walked into another bar, and a couple guys bought me a couple beers. And then when the Boise State fans started to show up, I started putting on. And then all the Boise State fans, like some of them recognized me. They're saying, like, hey, are you guy that guy Raja Bleeds Blue on Twitter? I'm like, yeah. So people started tweeting that, and more fans came. So every once in a while in between beers, I would just go outside the bar, start waving my flag around, and then some of the local media guys showed up, and Ryan Clady and Alex Guerrero showed up, and they did a little hit with Jay Tust on TV, and they asked me just to stand behind them. And, I just kind of wanted to just stand in the background and, wave the flag around. And one thing that I don't know if you also saw another Oklahoma State fan took a picture of me and said, you know, I'm ready for Boise State to leave. Because what I did was I saw a group of Oklahoma State fans just eating their food, and I just nonchalantly went behind them and was just drinking my beer, not even looking at them and waving my flag. So that gave some traction in Boise.
So whatever. How did T. Boone Pickens Stadium compare to some of the other places that you've been?
I'm trying to think if I've ever been to a nicer stadium in my life.
That's the billionaire oil money.
Exactly, yeah.
It is so nice aesthetically. And the whole campus, I was blown away because it's, you know, you think state school, I didn't think it was that good. But there was like gardens and the library was really nice. It was just a really pretty campus. And that stadium is incredible. You know, 68,000 people, so it's not that big, but just the way it's laid out with that gigantic TV there, it's really fun to kind of walk around and It's really nice aesthetically.
All right, so you took a picture. We'll get to the game in a minute, folks, because I've only traveled a handful of places. I've been to just a few places here and there. So you got a pretty good seat. So you were, because you're on TV as well a little bit because of where you're sitting.
Yeah.
How, like, were you, like, where, I remember seeing a little bit, but you were, because they do the shot so tight. Were you, like, in a huge Oklahoma State section, or did you find your tickets to make sure you're in the visitor section so it's not you by yourself, maybe, with a bunch of Cowboys fans lurking around and taunting you the whole game?
So what happened was I became friends with the guy known as BSU Pimp. I don't even know how we became friends. I think we saw each other at a spring game. We started talking, and that's when I was writing for Bronco Nation News. So he just kind of chatted it up with me and some of the other guys from Bronco Nation News. And then me and we tailgated a few times, and I sat next to him. And then we ended up just going to the Baylor game together, and then we went to the Oregon game together. And, you know, we just kind of became close. So he told me before the game, he's like, hey, call them up. I've added you to my account, and we'll put they'll get you the best tickets that Boise State can get. So I'm like, all right, cool. Awesome. So I called, bought two tickets. But those tickets, if you looked at where they put Boise State, they did not put Boise State up in a good section. So what happened was...
of course not. Why would they?
Yeah, the BSU Pimp called me up and said, hey, man, I need to know within, like... I need to know by the end of this phone call, are you down to pay a lot more to move to the front row? And I just said, yes, whatever. I'll just put on my credit card. So
whatever it takes.
Yeah, whatever it takes. And with ESPN, what they usually did is they just kind of like waved at us and said, hey, we're gonna put you guys on right now and, you know, put the camera on out there. So, like, you know, they told us to kind of cheese it up and stuff like that. So those shots after the touchdown, we knew the camera was coming on us.
That's pretty cool, that type of stuff. Yeah. So I guess we have to get to the actual football portion of the game.
Yeah.
So I did not see this game live because I was doing a few things. It ended up being 44-21. It was way closer for the whole game because I was watching this on Sunday morning. I'm like, I thought this game was kind of a blowout. I saw stuff that we'll get to, like special teams, miskeys, which are unfortunate. But this wasn't This was really a reasonably – the finals – let me tighten up my question here. They dropped out of the rankings one of the polls. They dropped another. The 13-point deficit's not as big as the game ended up being. I think it was much closer than that after actually watching the whole thing. Do you think that's kind of the same way?
I thought that I felt really good at the end of the first quarter. I think it was tied 0-0. Boise State missed a field goal, and they had the ball, and they were driving. So I felt really good at the end of the first quarter. But after Oklahoma State's second score, which I think was the punt block, I started. Oklahoma State, it seemed like to me, and I don't know if Matt watched the game, but if he could comment, but it seemed like Oklahoma State made a lot of adjustments in between the first and second quarter, and my confidence started to slip away. And by the third quarter, you know, I didn't know. I mean, I kind of started to feel like we need one of those, like, pick sixes or a crazy punt block of our own, and you knew it wasn't going to come, and then it just slowly, the game just started slipping more and more. So I didn't really feel like it was that close in the second half. You know, I had an ominous feeling, but the thing that was kind of keeping me kind of hopeful is just what happened in Fort Collins last year. Just, you know, you never know what could happen, but it didn't feel good in the second half.
Yeah, I mean, watching it from home, it kind of seemed like the one big adjustment that I noticed in the time period that you're talking about from in the first half was that Oklahoma State was doing a lot of damage with the zone read. And I kept thinking to myself, how is that big dude, Tyler Cornelius, how is he running through the Boise State front seven like that? Because, I mean, it wasn't glamorous. It seemed like he was stumbling pretty much every run he had. But, I mean, he did have a couple of crucial pickups in that first half. He did average a little over 5 yards per carry. And, you know, even though Boise State kind of held him in check through the air, you know, he was only 4 of 10. But he did have that big passing play that set up their first touchdown to Tylan Wallace, where I believe it was Jalen Walker that got beat.
Right.
And so I guess that makes me wonder, like, how much do you think Boise State missed Tyler Horton in this game?
I think they missed him quite a bit. And see, here's the reason they missed him. Because so what I'm reading after the game is that Avery Williams had a hamstring or ankle tweak.
Yeah.
And we didn't know that. And in the third quarter, me and the guys were saying, is like, Williams is getting killed out there. And the thing is, the only backup guy in the secondary that we knew we could trust was Jalen Walker. And, you know, he's not as good as Williams or Horton, but he's a guy we could trust, but he's already out there. So there was no option to – it's better to play a hobbled Williams, and he just got targeted over and over. And, you know, Walker, he's all right. Excuse me. As your third option at cornerback, but if you don't have that lockdown cornerback on one side, and it seemed like DeAndre Pierce just had to, like, who the strong safety just had to slide over to Williams' side the whole second half, and then you had you knew Hill was going to do damage, and then Cornelius running the ball. It's just Boise State was just stretched too thin with the secondary banged up like that.
Yeah, I was hoping, like, when I chat with the guy at the Oklahoma, and when me and our Matt preview figured defense is why they were going to be the edge, but if those, right, both those guys are hurt, it's a big deal. Like, not make the cliche, if I could speak, or excuse, depth is difference between even how good Boise State recruits and brings in compared to Oklahoma State, who's a top three Big 12 team, or even other schools that are like, hey, six or eighth, sure, in their league. And so that's an issue. It's like if you trust a guy, but who are they going to play? Put a true freshman who's going to be beat even worse, or a guy who's never played before? That those are tough decisions to make. And like, I like, maybe like going through and watching what I was going through, like first quarter, second quarter, it seemed to be, even though I already knew the score coming into the game, it was like a slow burn. It's like, okay, they're up 17-7, 20-7. Okay, 14-20. Yeah, we're back in it. Then they get the back-to-back touchdowns. It's kind of what figured, okay, this game's completely over at 34-14. And Brett Rippon played well. He threw way too many times, but a couple things I noticed, besides the secondary being banged up, which very difficult to overcome, the running game wasn't there at Alexander Mattison outside of maybe a couple runs. And look at how many times Brett Rippon had to be rushed. He had how many times was he sacked? 7 sacks? Jeez. That's also, yeah, like, that's a huge thing. Like, Boise State's offensive line is usually really good, and he gets sacked that many times, minus 30 rushing yards, whatever came from sack yardage. He was harassed all day long. 10 TFLs? That line just got manhandled, and that's why they had to pass for so often, being shotgun as much as they were.
Well, you know, when I was talking about adjustments, I was kind of referring to the adjustments that Oklahoma State made, yeah, on defense, because well, Boise State, like, even though they didn't score in the first two drives, and, you know, they had a 25-yard field goal that they missed, but they were moving the ball pretty well, just kind of settling in. I think the real switch that they made was I talked to a bunch of fans about this, is Oklahoma State's defensive coordinator. I think he's from Duke. He's a new guy, and he's aggressive. And I think he made the decision, like, let's put their quarterback on his back. And if he beats us, he beats us. And Rippon did a few times. He did beat the blitz with the throw. But I don't know if they were rushing more or how they were getting more pressure. But Boise State couldn't counter with Mattison, which they needed to do. But they were just the guys that were blitzing just got Mattison before the line. And at least hit him before the line. And I think that was the adjustment that,
yeah,
they just said, we're just going to throw the house at Rippon. And it worked.
Yeah, I saw that too, because the first couple of drives, they went far. They had that one in the end zone. Was that to
Hightower?
The one that was just bobbled out of bounds after they reviewed it. Like, that could have been a big difference had that been a touchdown.
Right.
But, man, but you're right. Adjustments weren't just like them attacking. Well, it was, I guess, attacking, but there was something that changed, like you said, after the first couple of drives, first quarter plus. It looked like a different team out there for Oklahoma State, what they're doing. And it's good coaching on them. They did a good job in making those changes to figure out, here's what we can do, because I thought there'd be, well, just more points for Boise, but they made the moves and got it done, and they won convincingly after basically that late second half where they took over the whatever. They started dominating, I'll say it. They played quite well, even though 13 points, or not – no, I can't do my math. 23 points, right? Is that what we got here, Matt? Are you the math? Who's the math? Who's the math guy here? Who can do math? Too many points. It's like, are you disappointed? I assume you're disappointed, but was there something that makes you feel optimistic about this game?
Well, I'm optimistic because we're not going to play anybody with this type of talent levels for the rest of the year.
There you go.
So, and we did look pretty good the first two games, and our quarterback is a stud. So that makes me feel pretty good. I don't know if the special teams, if that was because I haven't watched any highlights. Actually, I just looked at the box score for the first time about 10 minutes before you called, because I want to hold off the rehashing of the game. So I don't know what happened on the punts, if those were just two bad breaks or if there's some real issues. And I don't know if the offensive line just – if it's a coach thing, or – because they played really well. The offensive line played really well the first two games. And so I don't know. I feel good. We're coming off the bye in Wyoming. I don't know what happened against Wofford. I'm guessing
offense. Offense is terrible. Yeah. That's all. That's the cliff notes. Offense sucks.
Okay, so Boise State will have a bye and go crush Wyoming and Laramie, which will feel good. And then
defense could make some moves a little bit. It may not be 40-0, but you know how their defense is. They'll do a little bit of something.
Right. So, but what I'm thinking is, if Boise State can go take care of Wyoming on the road, which I think they will, if they could take care of San Diego State at home without Christian Chapman, that's a nice break, and that's a good win to put on our belt. And then the mojo might be back. And kind of like last year, I'm hoping that we go 11-1 instead of 10-2. But if we get those two wins after the bye week, I think Boise State should be back on track.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I think. Oh, go ahead. I was going to say, I think the best thing you can say is, like, we've seen Boise State bounce back from this before.
Right.
And, you know, it wasn't as though they gave up late in the game. It wasn't like a full-on collapse or anything like that. Even though Brett Rippon was pretty much under pressure the entire 60 minutes, you know, they still were able to move the chains. They were still 50% on third downs, and they were 3-of-4 on fourth downs, too. So they showed a willingness to kind of take chances and try to stay on the field, try to keep up with the Cowboys. And that is the kind of thing I think bodes well for this team in the long run. Because with, like, you know, one game, I'm not going to panic about Boise State. And I really don't think that Broncos fans should either.
No, and really quick, I remember now, Raj, you talking about the punts. It was basically Oklahoma State timing it perfectly. That's what the two punt blocks were. There's something like a two-second thing. They're saying how they – whatever the time it takes to normally get a punt off, they kind of – I don't know how they did it. They got good coaches. They figured that something out. It still comes down to blocking, but it's some timing issue where they either knew the count or were able to get a jump immediately and were able to get back there. And there's that, and then the line didn't play great, and that kind of led to two blocks. But those are fluky things. Even though they happen and it aided in Oklahoma State winning, those aren't going to happen all the time. And so it's not like something they should worry about too much. You should control it and make sure it doesn't happen again. But they're just kind of one-off type items that happen in the game. And you missed a field goal that hit off the upright, the first one. It's like, geez, the touchdown that was nearly had in the first couple drives right there. There are chances, like, they could have maybe scored a few more points. Also, third down conversion was pretty poor in this game. Only too many, first of all, 22. Convert half, which is not bad, but that's just, you're not going to convert 14 of 22 or 16 of 22 in any given game because first and second down weren't going their way. That's why they had 22.
Well, if Rippon had like a hand within a foot of him, he had to start making moves and had to start looking for Jace Blakely, who got six catches because he just had to get rid of the ball. And Blakely got six catches for 30 yards for 5 yards a catch. So that's why they had so many third downs.
All right, should we get to the big picture talk now, I guess?
Yeah, let's do it.
Oh, so, before we get to that, I kind of want to get to Matt's take because I was watching – I was only just watching the game live. I think Boise State's defensive line did play pretty well. I think the they were getting pressure with just four or five guys. The problem was is Oklahoma State's quarterback was gigantic, and he turned into Cam Newton. So I do think that the defensive line played well. I just don't know how this guy – who I thought – I remember at the end of the first quarter, I'm like, Taylor Cornelius is not going to beat Boise State. And I felt really good. And then he started running, and he was breaking two tackles every single play, even if he got 4 yards and our defensive line was touching him. Matt, is that what you were seeing, too, from TV?
That is mostly what I was seeing, yeah, because they did get three sacks. You know, Jabril Frazier had the pair. Right. And, yeah, it was really strange because, like, you're not used to seeing Boise State miss so many tackles or so many broken tackles. But I really think that's more of an aberration than anything to be seriously concerned about.
Okay.
All right. So now we're ready. Should we? So here's the thing we're talking about: New Year's Six stuff. We may do some weekly thing, possibly. That's in the works.
Yeah.
So this loss, like as we mentioned, I think either when me and Matt ended the first part of this, this loss clearly does not knock Boise State out of that running for getting to a big Moneyball game, because we've seen when they went to Fiesta Bowl, what did they lose, Rush? Two regular season games and still
two regular season games, yeah. Air Force and Ole Miss.
Oh, that's right, yeah. The Ole Miss opener, then Air Force, weird, one of the weird Air Force losses over the past couple of years.
Yeah, Weston Steelhammer game.
Oh, yeah, Jesus. He's a stud. But they lose this game. That's one loss. Fresno has a loss. San Diego State has a loss. Obviously, this is the best loss if you're going to go that route at the moment, I'd say, because Oklahoma State's now top 15 in both bowls, it looks like. UCF, yeah. Here's what matters. It comes down to whoever wins the conference, and right now UCF, because they're sitting at 16, and they missed the North Carolina game. So that's – or no, that was South Florida, was it? Or
No, that was UCF. No,
oh,
I'm looking at
the schedule's wrong. There it is. I was looking at FAU games. So that game's canceled, which could come back and be an issue for strength of schedule wise since they do use that.
That's an improvement to their strength of schedule. But continue.
Yeah, okay.
Well, I think if you look at the standings, it's the American. The way I look at it is the American Athletic Conference. They got three teams that are undefeated. But the good thing, if you look at it from Boise State, San Diego State, and Fresno State's point of view, they're all in the East. So there cannot be a situation where there's two undefeated American Athletic Conference teams playing in the finals where that's a de facto playing game.
Yeah.
So I think, well, the advantage Boise State has is Boise State will go to the New Year's Six game over any other one-loss team, including UCF, just because 13-1 or 12-1 is better than 11-1, especially when UCF did not play North Carolina and Boise State's only loss is to Oklahoma State. So I think if you look at that schedule, I think an undefeated team from the American Athletic Conference East probably is in that first hole, and then Boise State with one loss is in the two hole, and I think UCF with one loss would be in the three hole, and then I would guess Cincinnati and South Florida. I guess you could just say anybody in the East would be in the three hole, and then I would put San Diego State and Fresno State in the five hole at with one losses as the 12-1 Mountain West champion. Is that what you guys would think?
Well, not if Fresno or San Diego State beat Boise.
Because they'd be Boise twice in the scenario.
Well, that's what I'm saying. They all play each other. And so it's kind right. of the – so if it's a one – here's what I'm getting. Because if it's a one loss – I guess – okay, I get your point. Now, yeah. If it's a one loss, either of those teams, it's meaning they'll beat each other else. I would still put San Diego State as if – here's the thing. If it's the one – you got to think kind of bigger picture on this. Because I remember doing this years ago, and you can get trapped, or maybe even last year. You kind of get trapped. One loss, who's played who. If you think about what – overall, if San Diego State has one loss – it's only to Arizona State. That means they would have beaten Boise at least once. Or no, excuse me, sorry. They beat Arizona State. Sorry, Stanford, right. That means they would have either beaten Boise once or even twice.
Probably twice, yeah.
Yeah,
once or twice.
Who knows what Utah State will do. They look pretty good. But I'm saying at least you Boise State once. So if it's a – but you're right. A one-loss Boise is going to be above San Diego State. But I would argue a one-loss Fresno or San Diego State would be possibly even above any American team. Because look at UCF. Unless they go out and destroy Pitt – but Pitt looked awful versus Penn State.
That's true.
SMU's terrible. Memphis can put a ton of points. Navy will put a ton of points. I don't trust Cincinnati at all to win more than maybe 8 or 9 games. It's really UCF, I think. And who is the other undefeated team at the moment? South Florida?
South Florida.
But they play each other the final week of the season, and late losses hurt them. So I would put, right now, clearly, undefeated whoever, UCF, Cincy, undefeated American champ, number one. Number two, one-loss Boise. But number three would be, I would put a one loss San Diego State, one loss Fresno above a one loss UCF.
My take is somewhat similar. I just think that because we know Boise State, Fresno State, and San Diego State all play against one another, if one of those teams sweeps the other two, that team is going to have a better resume than any of the top three teams sweeping any of the other top three teams in the American. Because UCF's schedule is garbage, with or without North Carolina. Because
Pitt's terrible. They're okay.
And even if they beat up on Memphis twice, like they did last year, Memphis hasn't really beaten anybody yet. Like they beat up on Mercer and they beat up on Georgia State. Congratulations! Like their strength of schedule isn't actually that much better. By Sagarin, it's sitting at 149 right now. Yep. UCF's is sitting at 224. 224. That's not a typo.
96 worse than any FBS teams are there out there. 130, remember, folks.
And by comparison, San Diego State, Boise, and Fresno are 34, 46, and 61, respectively. So they've all played above average schedules, you know, and assuming that they go into their matchups as, like, you know, 8-1 or 9-2 teams, those are going to be fairly significant wins for whoever wins those games. And I just don't see, you know, a 10-win South Florida if they lose to UCF. Like, South Florida hasn't played anybody. Memphis hasn't played anybody. You know, if UCLA falls off the map, like, that's great. Cincinnati beat them. But guess what? They played a trash Miami of Ohio team, too. An Alabama A&M and an Ohio team that's good but not great. So I just don't see the overall resumes stacking up well as any team from the Mountain West that would beat the other top teams in the conference.
Also, I'll pose a question to both of you, but here's one thing for Boise State schedule that also clearly helps them out is BYU somehow might be sort of good, beating Wisconsin. And doesn't and Fresno and San Diego State both play Hawaii, who could be a pretty good team as well. So mm-hmm. I think there's more teams that are better. But the way, Matt, you said if one of these three teams sweeps the against each other, as for both you and Raj, would that team be ahead of an undefeated UCF team? Or would they be ranked high enough just because they're already ranked 16th, that they would be high up no matter what, and they wouldn't jump a one-loss Mountain West team that sweeps San Diego State, Fresno, or Boise in whatever order?
I think fairly or unfairly, some UCF's going to have to stumble at some point.
Well, I'm saying, what if they don't? What if they are 12-0 with the Kansas?
If they don't, game? If they don't, then the Mountain West is kind of screwed, rightly or wrongly. Yeah, I yeah. think.
That, I mean, that I think Boise State might get some consideration in this scenario, but I just think it's too hard, and it shouldn't matter. But UCF would be riding like a 25 game win streak or something, and to like leave them out for a one loss Mountain West team, that's just hard to sell to the public, whatever the computers say.
But if they're going by using what they say, strength of schedule, and beating teams with winning records. I'm just saying, like, yeah, look at Boise. I know Nebraska doesn't look very good, but what if Troy went to the Sun Belt? What if Oklahoma State's top two or three in the Big 12? What if BYU turns around and wins 9-plus games this year? Utah State's way better. Fresno's going to have 10 wins. Utah State could have 10 wins. Just saying. San Diego State could have 10 wins. Wyoming could have, like, 8 or 9 wins if their offense could score 12 points or more in a game. I'm just looking overall. I know we know this league closer, but it's if they are going to go by teams with winning records – as a indicator, Boise's going to have at least who's not going to have winning record? UConn and New Mexico. Like they might face nine teams with winning records at least.
But Air Force can have a winning record.
Maybe that's why I went nine. Like here's the heaps of questions: CSU, Air Force, and New Mexico. BYU's weird because they won last week, but you know, I'm saying eight teams could have winning records on their schedule, right?
Well, right. I think that Boise State would won. Well, I don't think that Boise State will get ahead of UCF. I think it'll get interesting if they have one loss and Cincinnati's undefeated. I think that because Cincinnati, I just looked at the rankings. Cincinnati and Fresno State have 0 votes in the AP, which is pretty surprising for me.
Yeah.
Cincinnati is undefeated and does not have one vote in the AP poll.
And sure, and they beat UCLA, and Hawaii had votes when they beat just a CSU and a New Mexico State. So
yeah, so that it's people don't think very highly of Cincinnati, probably for obvious reasons.
Because it's Cincinnati, and what's it, Fickell coaching their team or something?
Well, they beat, I don't know what AA, okay, Alabama AMU.
FCS team, that's why.
Right? That's what they just beat, so.
Well, and let's not forget that some of the teams in the American, their schedule is going to get dragged down if only because some of the best teams in the other group of five conferences for the moment have beaten American teams. Like North Texas just right. went out and whooped SMU last week.
And Arkansas.
And Buffalo just went out and beat Temple, you know, last week. So, and both of those teams, by the way, are 3-0. So even though Conference USA and the MAC still have kind of an upward climb as far as their strength of schedules are concerned, you know, if as long as they stay undefeated, they're still going to be in the conversation too.
That's fair. No, any undefeated team will be. But remember, a couple years ago, Western Michigan went to Cotton Bowl. Boise State, I think, was ahead of them when they were with one loss.
Yeah, I'm just saying overall, the American has a lot of trash schedules.
No, they do. You're not wrong at all.
And the teams that UCF or South Florida, whoever would beat, is not going to do them very many favors. I don't think it's going to move the needle among voters.
Like, because UCF doesn't play Houston this year, and Houston looks to be pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Even though they got whooped up by Texas Tech yesterday. Because maybe I mean, Arizona's terrible. That's why, too. Arizona's not looking any doing them any favors either.
There's a lot of good scenarios, and we're not going to sit here and break
it's
down.
It's too early. It's too early.
But there's a scenario where like Houston could beat USF, and then USF could, you know, win the division still by beating Cincinnati. So, I think I would kind of retract what I say because you guys, I think that if you have a one loss, I think Boise State's going to be the best one loss team, and in that scenario, obviously, they're not competing with the one loss. San Diego State or Fresno State, it'd just be against a one-loss AAC. So I think that's the number one. And I think everything else is a toss-up. Cincinnati, Florida State, Houston, Fresno State. Well, I said Florida State, I meant USF. I think that's all a toss-up. So it's – do you think it hurts that Cincinnati USF, UCF, they all three of them just play each other the last 2 weeks of the season. Do you think that hurts them or helps them?
If you lose.
Well, if it's anything like last year, it might hurt them. I mean, let's not forget that Fresno and Boise played each other.
Right, and Fresno State was gaining steam.
Yeah, and if Boise had won that first matchup in Fresno, I think that I think it would have helped them a lot more than it ended up helping Fresno by kind of vaulting into the top 25 at the very last minute. But I guess we'll find out. I don't know.
I would say it hurts because late losses hurt because you drop in rankings.
Yeah.
And well, so that's my point. Like, if it's end of season scenario, UCF, USF, they play each other late, it's like, even if it's, well, I guess that could be a technically elimination game, but my point is, like, if it's a back-to-back game or week 12 or 13, you lose, are you going to really rebound even if you do win your conference?
Yeah.
It's tough. It shouldn't matter when you lose, but it's who you play, and it is still when you play. That's why Boise losing now, Fresno losing, San Diego State losing. It's like you said earlier, they could have a 10-game winning streak when all said and done, end of the year, instead of a 2-game winning streak.
If Boise State does not lose another game, they'll be ranked probably about 20th at the Mountain West Championship game. I think that's pretty reasonable, right?
Yeah.
I think they would be higher than that if they went undefeated from here. Yeah.
They should be. Should be. That's a key word, right?
Where would San Diego State and Fresno State be if they went undefeated from here on out?
Probably the same, 18 range. I'd say 15 to 20 range is where any Mountain West team would be heading into the title game would be.
That sounds about right.
The question is where you would rank them. The question would be, where will the college football committee put them?
They should be about 15. If either of these teams, if any of them sweep, I'd say about 15 would be about right.
Yeah.
But it won't be. It'll probably be closer to 18 or 19, maybe even 20. Right?
All right.
I'm just saying, that's what the polls do.
The thing that's kind of, kind of crappy for, like, fans is the AAC, Cincinnati, USF, and UCF are all just going to stay undefeated for a while because they don't play each other or Houston till way later in the season. They just play the bottom dredges of the American Athletic. So it's just going to be a waiting game for us. So hopefully whoever is coming out of the Mountain West is getting close to that 20th spot by the time the championship game comes around, or even by week 10 and the Americans starts beating up on each other.
You're right.
That's, I think, the way to go.
No, that's a good point because Cincinnati plays – last month they played Navy, USF, UCF, and ECU. Three of those four are good. UCF has a similar schedule, Navy, Cincinnati, USF. And when you look at the game on, say, they're an ESPN or they get a couple of games in ABC, if you see like 13 UCF versus 19 Cincinnati, that makes a big deal. That's a big difference. But, that's what I'm saying. You're right, though. If they play teams late, they keep winning, winning, winning. Like Boise and San Diego State play in a couple weeks. Boise might be ranked. If they were ranked at one poll, we'll see where they're at. But to get my point, if it's late in the year, like, oh, this team's 13th and 19th. They're just 13th because polls are flawed, and I know the playoff polls are a bit different, but if you keep winning, they're going to say they're not going to move you down if you win. Odds are you're going to move up, or move up because somebody loses in front of you, not necessarily your performance, but the performance of a team ahead of you who stumbled, and you get the benefit because they lost, and you're the next guy up.
That's true. And Matt, before I let you go, one thing that I want to say is when Fresno State comes to Boise State and plays on Friday night on ESPN2, if both teams are sitting at 8-1, you know how the voters are. If they see the game on ESPN2, because why wouldn't they watch that? The winner of that game is going to get a probably like a 2 or 3 spot bump just from that game if both teams are standing at 8-1.
I would hope so. Yeah.
We'll see. I think a plan we should do, because this is a talk that can go forever.
Yeah,
I think our plan, which we loosely discussed, because that's how we do plans, we do it on the podcast. We may attempt to do some sort of a New Year's Six podcast throughout the week. Maybe not this week, because this clearly qualifies as the New Year's Six podcast at the moment. What we're doing mixed with our Boise recaps. So if you guys want this, let us know. We're probably going to do it, even if you don't respond, because that's what we do. And we may just have some fun during the week to go over schedules and spend 20 or 30 minutes on this once a week. I think that'll be fun, right? If we can swing it.
Yeah, I don't see why not. It's always fun to figure out who to root against.
Perfect. All right, so that wraps up our week 3 recap / near 6 second half of the show. So, Raj, go unpack, do some laundry. I don't know what you're doing. Get the blue paint if it's still stuck anywhere. Behind the ears is a hard spot to get, so be careful about that. Just get that taken care of. But, everybody, thank you for listening. Again, subscribe, tell a friend. if you go to iTunes, Stitcher, or whatever, leave some sort of review. That's preferably 5 stars. Say we're terrible, but give us 5 stars. That's fine, too. MWR.com. Check out all of our stuff throughout the week. We got week 4 coming up. And for this show, we'll be back probably. We'll see if we're doing 2 partial podcasts to make it 1 big one. But we'll see you next time, folks. And let's keep it rolling.